The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
Inevitably, all of us will ask God this one important question.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Then everything can seem so clear. AM 1260 The Rock presents God Calling. This locally produced program looks closer at stories of religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. And now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Welcome once again to God Calling. This is a very special day and a very special program. Today is World Day for Prayer for Vocations. And we're going to do a vocation roundtable today with some folks from very different backgrounds and the same calling in a way, but just different backgrounds and different ways of worshiping God. Sister Phyllis Ann Lavelle is at Our Lady of Lourdes Shrine, and Sister is a member of the Sisters of the Most Holy Trinity. Father Eric Garris is the Diocesan Vocation Director, a parish priest, and Father Daniel Bowen is Vocation Director for the Mercedarians. Father, welcome. And sister, welcome.
Thank you very much.
You've all been guests before, and Father Garris, you're my first three-timer.
Oh, wow.
Three-time guest. Isn't that good?
Three times the charm.
Third time's the charm. Hopefully this one goes better than the past two.
Hey, we had you back, right? They were good programs.
Keep coming back.
Yes, exactly. Sister, we've all covered each of your vocations, but let's do a brief summary of how did you first receive the call that maybe religious life was in your future?
Well, that's a good question. Because there's two stories.
Okay.
One story is the practical story where, I went to school at a Lady of Mount Carmel West, and I met the sisters there, and really, they were just like, wow, they were magnificent. They didn't know that, they were typical people. And so then did a lot with them, and they brought me up to the shrine, which was our mother house, still is. Mm-hmm. And I never left, really. So, I've gone to school here in Cleveland, went to St. Augustine Academy, which is now defunct, but then Notre Dame College and John Carroll University. But my religious calling was to the Sisters of the Most Holy Trinity. That's the easy, quick way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you another thing that happened. My mom and dad were married like 10 years and couldn't have kids. Mm-hmm. I'm an only child. And my dad was from Italy and came here right before World War II. He was in World War II as an American side. His brother was on the Italian side.
Wow.
So, the story, I'm going to try to cut it down. But anyway, so they had been married 10 years. They got married after the war. You always bring your bride back to your family. So my mom was from Cleveland, and they went back, and my family did a pilgrimage to a shrine in Italy. Well, after the pilgrimage, mom was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew that until I was 18, and my great aunt, who's on her deathbed, said to me, oh, I have to tell you this story. So we prayed for you. So that when I entered community, they were not surprised at all, because they felt this was a gift from God. So we give the gift back to God. Mm-hmm. So that's the other part of the story. So, there you go. And I have not a day of regret. It's been fabulous. It's been a wild ride. I've been all over the place representing our community. All I wanted to do was teach school. Ended up as principal, ended up as superior, then major superior, then Italy with our general eight, mm-hmm. Consulting kind of thing. So that's a quick end of it. There's more, but I don't want to take all the time.
Well, it's funny being a reporter for all those years, and people tell me they have two stories. I always say, which one do I believe?
Yeah.
In this case, I think I believe them both.
Thank you. Thank you.
Father Garris, what called you to diocesan parish priest?
I think growing up in parishes and going to parish schools, I went to Our Lady of Mount Carmel East. And so we have got that little connection here. And there's some sisters from your community who were grew up there as well, but was greatly influenced by diocesan priests. I don't think I ever met a religious priest until probably I was in seminary, and that would have been the Capuchins who do their college formation at Borromeo, and I was kind of wondering, who are these guys? What's going on with them? But just seeing the parish priests, I always say that I look at the various callings and the various vocations in terms of kind of like, you know, the Mercedarians have a particular charism and quality. And I like to think that the diocesan priests are kind of like the general practitioners. We kind of do it all. So just seeing the attraction to parish life and parish priests who are devoting themselves to families and the care of the parish and all that, that's been my greatest influence.
In doing this show very early on, I learned don't schedule parish priests in the morning.
Yes.
Funerals, just like that.
Yeah, and don't schedule vocation directors who are also diocesan priests in the morning because they might show up 40 minutes late. there's the little story behind the story, but it's good to be here. Who is the one who's late? Well, there's only one parish priest here, sorry.
I make no accusations.
Yes, diocesan, secular clergy.
I gave that up when I retired. No more accusations. Father Bowen, another Mount Carmel connection here.
Yeah, I was over at Our Lady of Mount Carmel West for about 3 years. We had our vocation office there while I was there, and so it was a blessing, and it's a parish that we were at for many, many years and just recently had to surrender to the diocese. But still in Cleveland, our order at St. Rocco's Parish.
Yep.
We've been there since 1924, and of course in the Diocese of Cleveland since 1922. But thankful to be always part of.
What drew you to the Mercedarian order?
Oh, yeah, good, great question. When I was discerning, I didn't really know about religious priests like Father Eric. The parish I went to was St. Gregory the Great, now known as Sacred Heart of Jesus, was a diocesan parish. And I first, for myself, God kind of put on my heart the calling to priesthood. That what came before for me. But then as I was discerning that with my spirit director and things, I kept talking about, I feel this sense to be detached, to really even places, people, I want to be able to just surrender all of that. So if God wants me to be on their side of the world, even though I don't think I'm capable of it, I want to be in that surrender. So then, you know, you're saying, well, you know, if you, unlike a diocesan or secular priest, is a religious priest, you know, a lot of those communities are international. They're beyond just a certain diocese, and they take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. So you really surrender everything. And as soon as I heard that, that really attracted me. And then it wasn't long after, it was around that time that I met one of the Mercedarian priests. And I was really taken by his zeal and his commitment. It was like, this guy is really all in. I mean, you know, he's from another, not even from the Cleveland area and that. And I was like, I wonder if that's what God's asking of me. And so they brought that to prayer. And then our order is a Marian order. So, you know, love the Blessed Mother. You know, many times up at the shrine of Our Lady of Lourdes, a go-to place for me since even before my coming into Catholicism.
So. And I probably should have started there. You're a convert to Catholicism.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks be to God.
What seed was that before the call to the priesthood?
So really, I dated a Catholic girl. So Catholic girls out there, listen, don't compromise your faith for anybody. Be insistent. She said, look, if you're going to be with me, I'm Catholic. We go to Mass. And, you know, I could have said, well, forget it. So she took a chance. But I was open. I said, yeah, okay. So then I started going to Mass. And then she explained to me how, you know, we believe that this, when the priest consecrates the bread and wine, that it's really Jesus. And you can adore him outside of Mass. So she introduced me to adoration. So here is a young couple. I'm not even Christian, right?
Right.
And I'm going to adoration. I'm going to Mass. And the peace and the joy that I sensed there was attractive and inexplicable to me. So then the idea of becoming Catholic didn't seem so outrageous, really.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a neighborhood, Mayfield Heights, on the east side, which is a lot of people were Catholic there or Jewish. Those were kind of the big faith traditions. So it was kind of in the air. Some of my teachers and things, you know, were Catholic, so it wasn't a completely foreign thing. But I just never had the invitation, really, I guess.
Father Garris, maybe we ought to get her name. She's quite an evangelizer.
Yeah. Help you out with... be careful. You know? I always say, like, you talk about adoration. I can't tell you how many of the candidates or discerners or whomever. I always say, be careful when you're discerning and going before our Eucharistic Lord, because... He works.
Yeah.
And I know that from my own life, and just, you know, always hearing kind of, we look at the various studies, CARA, study on vocations, 99.99999% of discerners find a lot of their vocation and their faith strengthened, and the call strengthened before Eucharistic Lord. So There was a guy who I was just meeting with not too long ago, and I said, where do you like to pray? And he said, well, the Adoration Chapel at Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Wycliffe. Mm-hmm. I said,
That's where I did a lot of my time praying.
Yeah. And I said, all right, well, just keep going there, and we'll meet, and we'll start an application soon. He goes, well, no, Father, I'm not ready. I go, you will be after.
You're right.
God will get you.
Have you ever heard the expression, be careful what you ask for?
Yeah.
Because the Lord always answers. And it may not be what you have asked for, but be careful because God gives you, 10 times that or 100 times that. So, Lord, I want to be closer to you. Okay, guess what? It's a vocation. Mm-hmm. It's a lifestyle change.
Sure.
Even with women religious, a lot of the young ladies, they have been to the Eucharistic Chapel. Mm-hmm. One of our sisters now teaches at Mount Carmel Wycliffe, and she's the religion director there for 7th and 8th grade, which is a really, really tough time for kids. But one of the things that she really pushes is, let's go to the Eucharistic Chapel. Let's go pray. Mm-hmm. Let's take some time out. That is so, so important.
Mm-hmm. We hear over and over again on the program, people trying to deny. They keep hearing this calling and they deny. And Father, just like you said, Father Garris, they go before for some adoration and it becomes clearer to them. And,
right. You can't run.
No.
And you can He's run faster. To Jesus or you can run away from Jesus. But I think especially in adoration, it's a time in which you're there, God's there, and a lot can happen.
And it's so different from society. Society is so noisy, and there's so many distractions, where when you're in the Adoration Chapel, it is totally opposite. It is silence, and you're listening for what God wants to tell you, for what He is talking. And you're not, hopefully, it's not your will. It's not you talking the whole time. Mm-hmm. But when you're out in the world, and you're at school, or you're working, or whatever, it's all this noise that's going on around you. You don't have it. You can't think. You just can't think. It's like, okay, let me go along, or let me go to the next best thing. Adoration Chapel is the way to go.
Father Bowen and Father Garris both have brought students up to the shrine.
Mm-hmm.
We'll continue to do so.
That's great.
Yeah.
And we're there.
The blessings
in
Cleveland.
When I was in seminary, I grew up not too far from there. So I loved the fact that you guys had an evening mass during the week, which meant that when I was home for break, I could sleep in and still get the mass. Now as a priest, evening masses are like, oh, I'm done with the day. I have mass at 6:37. I was always grateful for that.
If everyone will stay right with us on the radio, and all of you will be back after these messages on God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Welcome back to God Calling. Today, Sunday, is World Day for Prayer for Vocations. And we've talked some in the first segment about adoration and prayer for vocations. But as a person out there listening to the program, Father Bowen, what can they do to encourage vocations? Obviously, the title of the day is pretty clear, pray. But what do you suggest?
Encourage and invite. If you're a parent, if your child as a young boy or as a young girl has an attraction to the Mass, encourage that. Why not make little vestments for them if they're really into it, or get them a little incense or get them some Necco or what, I don't know what the little, something like a host, and let them play Mass. That doesn't mean they're abnormal or they're going to suddenly become a priest, but you never know. It can plant seeds, and certainly it's encouraging the faith amongst the other things that they're going to be interested in doing as they play or as they, at the young age, begin, and be open to that. Don't try to steer your child towards what you feel that child must be.
Mm-hmm.
He must do this, he must do that. And I know it's hard, because if we're only having a few children, we want our grandkids, but ultimately I think every parent would say, I want the best for that child. Well, the best for that child might be God wanting them to be a priest or consecrated religious. It could be that.
Sure.
And if they have that life, right, they're going to be happy.
Yeah.
They
I think back to myself as an only child, and in the Italian community, that was, oh my gosh, people are telling my parents, well, you're never going to have grandchildren. My father would show up at the school, we have 200 kids, and those were his grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Our mom would come up, and so it was like, well, they do. And, when mom was sick, the community was so kind enough to allow me to take care of my mother. If I were in the world, if I was a CEO, or not like I really would be, but anyway, of some company or something, you think I could take time off from work to take care of my mother? Or maybe I'd hire somebody, but it wouldn't be the same.
No.
So, you know, people think, and with women religious, it's different because, you know, men religious, because of you, the Eucharist exists, continues on. But with women religious, it's different. It's like, oh, aren't they cute? Mm. You know, they're cute women. And, oh, yeah, well, thank you. Well, that's nice. I like that. I like cute. But it's not encouraged. And as you said, Father, that, you know, encouraging vocations. Well, women vocations, I don't see them being encouraged. Parents, like, they want their daughter. As I said, my father wanted me to be a doctor. I don't like the sight of blood. And he went to the pastor at our parish, which was one of your priests, and said, you know, my daughter wants to be a religious, and thank God for him, because he told my dad, he goes, well, you want her to be happy, don't you?
Wow.
And he said, yes. He goes, well, so if you really don't allow her, because you had to get permission from your parents, I think I was 18, and then what happens if she marries somebody that's really not a good person, or she takes a road that's not good, and she will never be satisfied because the Lord is calling her? Give her a chance. Mm-hmm. So,
Father Garris, are parents' wishes sometimes an impediment to a vocation?
I
want
necessarily
want grandkids.
Yeah, that's a huge thing.
I also have the Italian background.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know in my own personal story, I have an older brother, older sister, and so thanks be to God for them that they provided my parents with grandkids, because I'm off the hook. But we find now, at least within discernment, that one of the greatest discouragements for vocations has been within the family. And I think part of it is the imposition of the parents' desires. Father Dan used a huge word earlier, like invitation.
Correct.
I always say that, like, God's will is an invitation, not an imposition. And especially when calling people that you see within the parish, within a community, you know, always invite, never impose. My joke is I've been a priest for almost 6 years. And when someone tells me, Father, I think you should be a priest, I'm like, well, no, I want to do what I want to do. You know, like, don't tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. But part of with the family is, I think it's the perception that as a priest, as a religious, to what Sister had said, like, they're not going to be happy in the same way that they would be if they were married and had children. For me, that's a great sadness, because what that says is that we as priests and religious aren't living the gospel charism of joy. Mm-hmm. And so people don't necessarily see. And I think time and time again, you look at Forbes, you talk about CEOs, like, time and time again, the happiest occupation, and I don't view this as just an occupation, it's our vocation,
sure. Mm-hmm.
is religious life. And so what we've tried to do in the vocation office is tried to have tailor-made programs and different things for families, where back in November we had 250 individuals, families come up and see the seminary. So you talk about, like, visibility, and just let them know, like, this is an option, this is who we are.
Exposure.
Yeah, and we started a whole vocation in the family video series, check it out on our YouTube channel, and where we interviewed moms and dads and just had people talk to it, because I think there is a great fear, like, will my son or daughter be happy? Will we see them? What's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to us? Like, Easter was just a couple of days ago, and I was with my family later in the day, but I was still with them, and I was able to celebrate, and they know that, like, okay, Saturdays roll around, and I can't be around, but that's fine. I still love them. They still see me. I still have them in my life, and they still have me in their life. And I think they see that I'm happy. I hope that they do, and know that I love my vocation. And so I think part of it is just living out the call to which we've been called.
I mentioned that I grew up in an Italian family, and I'm the oldest grandson. So my grandmother, I got it a lot, but my cousin John got me off the hook on that one. He was later the vocation director, actually, in the Diocese of Rochester.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, John?
Yeah.
I don't know if I should say thank you or be mad at him. You guys also sound so happy.
But
that, you know,
was also during the time, though. You talk about culturally. Like,
oh, yeah.
It wasn't just that people were having more children, but it was that, like, we lived in a pretty Catholic culture where,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
you know, you had Fortune on TV and various things. And so I think now that we live in a secular, it looks crazier for a person to say, I'm entering seminary, I'm entering religious life, I'm entering the convent. It's like, well, it's not crazy. It's just what God called them to do. And so they're doing it. And it may appear to be crazy because it is a little bit different than with what the rest of the world is doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think people see religious life, women religious, I can't speak to the men, but as an alternative way of life. It is a way of life. It's a vocation. It's not a job. It's not a career. And I don't think they look at it seriously. I just don't. Like I said, we get the feel, oh, you know, because, hey, the Shrine, we get so many people that come up. And they're so kind, and they're really wonderful people. I'm from all over the United States, even, well, Canada as well, especially now we're picking up after COVID. But it's like, oh, aren't those sisters cute? Yeah, we're cute, but we have a ministry that we do. And obviously, from what you two have said, we've been working at that ministry. And myself as well, you know, as a child coming up and coming up to the Shrine, the sisters would bring us up in eighth grade. That was our eighth grade trip. Wasn't that fun?
Wow. Exotic.
All the way to
Cleveland. From Cleveland all the way to
Cleveland to Euclid.
Yeah. Wow. You know, well, hey, I'm a lot older than you guys, so that was a lot, you know? And I think the families, it's very important, and what you're doing is very important to just educate the family. Say, hey, you know what? It is an alternative, but it's a good alternative, because how many times do we see women who are in their late 40s, early 50s, and they realize, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for all my life, and I've never been satisfied.
You know, sister, in doing the program, Dan Dealey and I, our production director, have talked about this. Some of the happiest people we talk to on this program are nuns, mm-hmm. middle-aged mm-hmm. or younger mm-hmm. nuns. And some of these orders, I knew nothing about it.
But, right. There are a lot.
But yeah. Some are formed in 1998, 1980. You know, sometimes I think of some of the Sisters of St. Joseph or something that I had.
Right.
You know, I'm going back hundreds of years, but some of these are new.
They are. The new folks, yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on the charism that you're called to. Now, our particular order, Trinitarians as the umbrella, the fathers began in 1198, and our particular branch began in 1762. We were one of the first apostolic orders. The others were all cloister. And even our foundress, she founded us for redemption of captives. And that's John of Matha, mm-hmm. who that's his main, the main charism. And how we interpreted that was to bring Jesus to the people, to the uneducated, to the folks that have nothing. And you'll find us we're in the Philippines. We just started a spot in Vietnam. We're looking at Poland, talk about Ukraine and Poland, but we're in Italy, America, Madagascar. We're usually in inner city. We're usually in a poor area, catechizing these folks.
I'm no vocation director, sister, but I don't think a cloister order would be good for you.
No, absolutely not. I know, people have told me that. Actually, that never entered my mind at all.
Well,
so,
you're evangelizing, right? I know.
You know what? I'm so excited about it. And I'm, like I said, I've been in a long time. I'm approaching my 50th.
Wow.
In 2 years, I think it's 2 years. And I can't believe it. I cannot believe it.
There it is.
Oh my gosh. Some people said, oh, you'll never last.
There's a challenge.
Yeah. Okay.
Father Bowen, this is a 2015 survey from a university. So I'm starting to doubt a lot of university studies anymore, but it says only about 30% of 18 to 34 year olds have any religion at all. You think that's overstated?
Well, you know, they call it the nuns, not like the nuns, but the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, right? It seems to be a movement, especially in Western Europe and the United States, of people that don't believe or don't feel they need God. Our culture in the U.S., we have to be honest, in a lot of cases doesn't support it like it once did. You know, it was maybe 40 years ago, you know, things were closed on Sunday. You went to church, spent time with the family. All of those supports are no longer in place. So it shouldn't be a surprise that, you know, I can still remember sitcoms that they're going to church. Mama's Family, mm-hmm. they came back from church on the show. This is a mainstream produced network program. But do we see that today? It's far and few between. So, yeah, it could be, you know, again, church isn't necessarily supported or encouraged in a lot of cases. So for them to not believe or not look into it. Yeah, those could be some factors. Sure.
And the media certainly has contributed to that, particularly in...
Except for EWTN, right?
Except that for sure. But I watched something on EWTN during the Christmas holidays. I don't know, it was Lawrence Welk or one of those programs.
Yeah.
And the reason it caught my attention was they were doing Catholic hymns. You wouldn't see that today in a million years. So it kind of startled me. We're going to take a break. Father Garris will come back. Your thoughts on that as well as we come back on God Calling right after these messages. You have AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Welcome back to God Calling. This is a special edition of God Calling. A whole hour today, and it's flying by so far, that's for darn sure. World Day for Prayer for Vocations. Father Garrison, we talked right before the break a little bit with Father Bowen about 30%, supposedly, of 18 to 34-year-olds have no religion at all. Do you get a sense that sometimes someone's coming to you, maybe thinking they're called, but the family's not religious, or they haven't been supported in that way?
Yeah, I don't think there's any normal. And I think part of it is you look at that era of people, and that's when individuals are going through intense personal change of self-discovery of who they are. And they're also given for the first time in their lives freedom oftentimes. Mm-hmm. So when you go to college, mom and dad aren't there to drive you in the morning to Mass. If you're going to Mass, it's because you're going to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think while we can focus on, yes, it may be that. And I don't necessarily, what was it, 30%? That seems kind of high. And I can only talk from experience, but as vocation director in the Diocese of Cleveland, one of the things that I've made a priority is on Sunday evenings, I'm trying to be at college campus ministry, masses, Newman campus ministry, parish life team masses, youth group, and all that. And so while there may be some young people who aren't there, the young people who are there are alive and they love their faith. Like Father Dan's currently down in Columbus, and I've gone down to Ohio State a couple times.
Absolutely.
And like Ohio State is like bussing with Catholics, and the campus ministry there is just thriving and flourishing, and we've got a guy entering our seminary from there, you know, next year. And so I think while there is this prevailing culture of disbelief, non-belief, or just kind of a general apathy, I don't care, you know, like it's not a vehement atheism, it's just kind of whatever, you know, there are people who are looking at that and saying, is there another way? And I want to follow that other way. And that becomes, they want to live a countercultural life, and they see, okay, in a prevailing secular culture, this world, I don't want it. Mm-hmm. Like I can tell you from the men who entered last year, our seminary, and even what we've seen following COVID, is that a lot of people, and I hear the story over and over again, of people who have gone to college, who have lived in the secular world, got a career, begin to move forward in their career, and they're like, I don't want this. There's no joy here. There has to be another way. And they sense that other way is like, hey, I thought about priesthood. I've thought about religious life. I've never really explored it because it didn't see it coinciding with my desire for fame, fortune, and comfortability. And it's like, but when I think about that, I'm more comforted and there's more joy there than the thought of I have to go to work for the next 8 hours, punch a time clock to get the money that I want to live the life that I want to live. But the life I want to live isn't the life I want to live. So it's the great conundrum of I think people's hearts.
Yeah. Sounds like you hear it a lot.
Less. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. Point about giving an alternative, right?
Right.
Give them an alternative. Sister, what about the women?
Well, I think it's awareness. I think women need to be aware that there is another way in the world. There is another way of life. There is another option that you can take. You know, I look at our shrine, and that's where I happen to be right now. I'm administrator there. But, you know, coming to our shrine, we're not a parish. There are no demands on people. So we get people from all over. It's a draw for them. There's no pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no pressure one way or another. It's like God is here. I can come, you know, we have Mass. Masses are full. They really are. Yeah. I can come to the grotto. We have a Holy Hour on Tuesday. And I can come to Holy Hour. Again, there we go back to Holy Hour and exposition. But I don't think, you know, those statistics are very harsh. I just think people don't, as I said, awareness, a connection. They need to connect with someone. I think young people do have a spirituality. I think they do have. They may not exhibit it, but they're discovering. As I said before, with all the noise in the world, and to discover that, oh, here, it's coming.
Father Garris.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things is you look at the desires of young people, and I think a lot of it is a desire for relationship, a desire for fulfillment, satisfaction, and but I also think it's interesting that if you look at national things, while there may be 30% of individuals between the ages of 18 and 34 not believing, I mean, the number one podcast for a long time was Father Mike Schmitz's Bible in a
that's
year.
That's right, yeah.
And Catechism in a year.
Yeah.
And so there's something that's intriguing them. There's something that's pulling them in. And I think there's something that's inviting them that, like, okay, this is my spirituality. And hopefully that's leading to something more. It's mm-hmm. not just I'm listening to a podcast in the car and, you know, checking the box. But,
right.
like, this is something, this is a springboard. This is a mode through which I think the Lord is entering in, and people will say, this has been huge.
I just finished The Chosen.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You can't turn it off.
Yeah.
and the thing I liked about it is it showed Jesus had a sense of humor.
Right.
The wedding feast at Cana, he was dancing, and, you know, it wasn't all signs of the cross.
Humanity. And I think that's part of it is that it, you look at something, you talked about presence and being intrigued in various things. All of us who are in this room are here because we met someone.
Right.
That's
right?
It.
Like
yes.
that there was a humanity that was used to bring in something more, mm-hmm. you know, like you met a Mercedarian, you met a Trinitarian,
yes.
mm-hmm. I met a diocesan priest. And so I think while there's a sterilization of our humanity and it becomes a very digital, false humanity, people really desire what? Human connection, relationship,
yeah. mm-hmm.
something more.
Mm-hmm. Father Bowen, what's the toughest part of your job these days?
Toughest part of the job? I guess it would say probably when I have to tell a guy I can't accept you.
Mm.
Maybe because he waited too long for his calling, or it's just not going to be a good fit for him. And that does happen, right? I mean, that
sure.
is it's hard because in a lot of cases they feel that they are called by God. And of course, we are all called by God, every one of us, priest, prophet, and king, and to continue to invite others to a deeper relationship or to a relationship with God. But sometimes it's not going to work for them.
It's got to be
could
very
be physically,
difficult.
Could be mental, could be emotional, could be there could be a lot of different factors. So that's hard because, you know, our charism, the Mercedarians, like sister is setting captives free, and some people can get themselves into captivity. And one of those things is constantly delaying your vocation, delaying and delaying and delaying. Sometimes it's not their fault in that. But there is sort of an expiration date, I have to say,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a sense, you know. For entering into consecrated religious life, you know.
So I wouldn't be on the A list at 70 years old.
Yeah.
There are other ways in which you can serve the church, Paul.
Absolutely right. How about, have you thought about
maybe one of them is what you're doing right now. There
right,
you go.
There it is.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah.
Actually, at my parish, a fellow that did the masses, live streamed the masses, got sick. So having been on TV for all those years, hey, why don't you do this? I couldn't touch any equipment. It was all union stuff, you know. It was, I had never done it before. So the first day I'm up there, and I kind of talk with my hands, as you can see. And so I had a tight shot of the priest. And I turn, and my arm hits this. All of a sudden, he went swinging off camera. Choir director just kind of looked at me and said, I told you I couldn't do it. Didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
Father Eric, what's tough about your job?
Oh, let me think about this. I think part of being vocation director is there's that new movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel a little bit of that sometimes. But there's also this sense of you have remote and you have proximate vocation, discernment, awareness thing. And part of it, I'm new to this, is trying to figure out the hard thing of, okay, is this someone who could, given freedom and ability to enter into this, like, is this next year? Is this 2 years? How mm-hmm. far? Where is this person on the spectrum?
Yeah.
And trying to understand that, that's the hard thing, is trying to learn that. So right now, the hardest part is learning a lot of these things. And it is difficult. I mean, even in almost nearly a year in the office, I mean, there's individuals that you have to say, like, and it's not so much we don't want you, but I always say discernment happens in two ways. We're discerning you as much as you're discerning me. And part is, you may not be called to this after conversation and after, you know, different things, but that doesn't mean that you're not called to be holy. And that doesn't mean that, like, God doesn't have a plan for your life. It just may not be diocesan priesthood. It may not be seminary discernment. There might be something more here. And so to journey with that person in that way, it's a difficult journey, but it's also a beautiful journey because, you know, what you're walking them, you're walking the path, you know, I think of the line from the Psalms, Lord, you will show me the path to life, hallelujah. And it's trying to illumine, okay, where will you experience the fullness of life?
Mm-hmm. It's got to be a little bit like walking a tightrope too, because you don't want to turn somebody off
sure.
and they get mad. Well,
right. And that's, I mean, the hard thing is we're blessed in the Diocese of Cleveland to have a lot of young men who are discerning,
mm-hmm.
and whether it be discerning religious life or priesthood. And so it's also hard to try to get to all those guys and talk to all those guys and, you know, try to figure out, okay, where's this guy? I forgot about this guy, checking in on this guy. Mm-hmm. So it's a good problem to have that, like, oh, we've got too many people. No, we don't. We need more people. You know, I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Father Bowen?
I did want to also at this moment just kind of put out there kind of one of the lost vocations that you don't really see much of today, the consecrated male religious. Mm-hmm. A man who's called to consecrate himself to God, just like a religious sister with the vows, pari chastity, obedience, but not called to holy orders. Mm-hmm. Really kind of rare today. And that is out there. I don't think a lot of men know that. I mean, because we need priests, you know.
For sure.
No doubt about it. But it's not for every man. It isn't. But some are called. And again, it doesn't mean you're lesser or some you can't make the cut. Like my classmate has a master's degree and is a full-time teacher at an inner city school, and he loves it, right? And he's able to bring something to that a lay person isn't, because he's got that community life that we have, the rich prayer life that we do life together. Mm-hmm. As a witness, it was more so, you know, how many years ago when we had more of the religious brothers. But I did want to throw that out there just to make mention. Yeah. You know,
exactly, sister. Tough parts.
The tough part. Just for an example, this is not my first job. I've got many hats, but usually when I meet the gals, like for example, there's this one young lady, and I just said to her the last time I met with her, I said, "Well, how long are you going to wait? You know, you come back and you're with us and you're happy and, you know, visiting, that kind of thing. Well, how long are you going to wait? When are you going to take the plunge? When are you going to do this?" And I got no answer. But again, I think you said it correct really well when you talked about the religious brother. Religious sister is the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not glamorous. Yeah. And it's the vow of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Well, you're not, well, look at it this way. You don't have to pay the bills unless you're the superior. So that's a good thing, you know. But I think getting the person to not be afraid. They're afraid of what am I getting myself into? And what's the reward? You know, it's not the big bucks. It's not the fame. You know, it's not the fortune. I mean, to me, that's what I think it is.
One of the first shows we did was with Father Garris and Father Tim Garreau, and I talked about being in a parish for the first time and going to the budget meetings and things, and Father Garris said, "I couldn't do my checkbook, and I'm looking at this budget with all these zeros. What are all those zeros?"
Yeah. They're not mine. I know that, but they are someone's.
That's for sure.
We're entrusted.
That's
with,
right.
With the care.
That's true.
That's right.
Yeah. Stay with us on God Calling, everybody. We'll be back after these messages. This is a special one-hour edition of God Calling, and it's on purpose because today is World Day for Prayer for Vocations. And three folks whose job that is, or has been for many, many years, is to do that. Father Garris, I looked at a mission statement from the pastoral leadership, and it talks about institutional convictions, meaning Christian discipleship, formation, theological thinking, communication, and collaboration. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in the Diocese of Cleveland, we're blessed to have two seminaries, two diocesan-run seminaries, Borromeo Seminary, a college seminary, and St. Mary's, our theologate or our graduate school, all of which are under one building at the Center for Pastoral Leadership. And it's kind of an interesting model where you have seminarians who are in studies, in formation, alongside, especially at St. Mary's, some of our lay students, some individuals who are pursuing degrees in pastoral ministry or various things. And so you look at the components of parish priesthood. What is a priest but a disciple of Jesus Christ who's able to communicate, you know, the mysteries in a sound theological way? And so, you know, when a man enters into formation, it's our desire to form him. One of my kind of selling points is that seminary is not just a place of information. You know, yeah, you'll be given the information, you'll be given the theological training, you'll be given the ability to think critically, but like what we're concerned with is the fullness of that person, their humanity, their spiritual life, their intellect, their pastoral ability to apply these things. And so part of what I do in preparing and journeying with candidates is come to the question of, okay, this is what parish priesthood is, which is many things, but this is what they'll be entering into. What is their aptitude to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, to communicate the gospel message? And that looks very different dealing with some high schoolers. A 17-year-old's baseline should look different than a 23-year-old's.
Sure.
And so part of that assessment is assessing their maturity, their ability, their affective maturity, their groundedness in their self-identity and awareness of things within themselves. Because what is formation? But that pulls that out of you. Formation's not an easy thing. All of us have undergone it and have participated in it. But I think it stretches the person not just to conform to this is the mold you need to be as sister, as brother, as priest, but like, who and how is Christ calling you as an individual to fulfill this vocation? Because you bring all of your individuality to that. And so we want to pull that out, but we also want to examine, okay, what do we need to talk about? How do we how do we need to manage and deal with things of the past and various things?
Mm-hmm. Father Bowen, similar process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all people, right? We're all on a journey, right? We're the movement from selfish to selfless. I mean, that's the Christian life. But to go into direct formation, you know, we have baggage, we have wounds, things like that. Christ is the healer. He wants to do that. He's patient with us. Us other in community are to help to do that for those called to the parish, the things to prepare them for being in the parish setting and to be able to relate. Religious life, you may be called to do other things, right? We might manage a shrine, a Marian shrine, the official national shrine of Our Lady of Lourdes in the United States, you know, or called to do prison ministry full-time or hospital chaplaincy. There's a lot of different possibilities. One of our brothers managed our parish cemetery.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, he's bringing a rich prayer life. And, you know, when people come there, it's a little bit different than maybe the usual gravedigger. He's going to be able to kind of counsel and come aside and partner and walk with them. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, formation, yes, to be conformed to Christ and his image, to be more of him. But, again, he doesn't destroy what he's created, you know.
Yeah, right.
But to bring the best of us, or as Matthew Kelly, be the best version of ourselves, as Matthew Kelly will say.
Yeah, exactly.
And the formation is meant to do that. And then even besides it, out of the seminary, your parish will be continuing to form you in a way, you know, and the different assignments that you're given. But in a religious community, your community found you. How do you reconcile when you have differences with they become schools of love to teach us, as a family does, you know, in a sense.
So when you did the accent, I thought you were doing Bishop Lennon.
Bishop Lennon, the Lord be with you. The
Lord be with you.
God rest him.
God ordained me a deacon.
God rest
his soul. Yeah.
Sister, similarly, Sisters of the Most Holy Trinity?
Right. Religious, they have a definite, I think most religious communities have a definite formation program. Our first year is postulancy, and it's kind of like getting to know you. Little by little, you immerse the woman into the life of the community, just doing either they're going to school or they maintain their jobs, whatever. But then second year, we have canonical year, where we call it the honeymoon year, because it's all about God. Any classes you take are all theology classes. Of course, we have classes, we do with that with the seminary. We also have classes in novitiate. And so the directress would take the young woman. Usually we only have like one, but because we're pretty small. And it's all about God. Any class that you have, any activity that you have, it's all about God. So it's a honeymoon. It's like you're on a year retreat. Mm-hmm. And then the third year of novitiate is more of the practical. You're in the ministry. You're working with one of the other sisters in one of the parishes, or you're working at the shrine, or you're doing another ministry that maybe you did before you entered. So sometimes people call formation the boot camp too. but I like that idea of canonical year, because when you leave canonical year, the honeymoon period, you're like, oh wow, go for
Father
it.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we look at how seminary formation is for diocesan clergy, and it's pretty much, you know, boom, 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 you kind of move through. And upcoming within the next year, things are radically changing to where we're moving into more of a, not a religious mindset, but we're talking about it in some ways of like every man who enters has to begin through this time of what we're calling like a propaedeutic year, a preparatory time that's somewhat likened to a novitiate, where it's essentially focusing all of your time and efforts upon your human and spiritual growth and maturation. Because it's very academic, and you get in and you go to school and you do this and you do that and you go here and you go there. But like to say we're going to devote a whole year to developing your humanity and spirituality is huge. I mean, and religious orders have that. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is you see not just, well, the issues that we've had with clergy is not that they're not smart enough, but it's within their humanity. It's mm-hmm. it's there mm-hmm. there are human issues that need to be examined, and we're saying yeah, and we're going to give a whole year for that mm-hmm. To do that. So the guys get their now the seminarians will have their honeymoon, not this upcoming year, but the year following.
Okay, that's great. Yeah.
It's good that everybody's talking and seeing what works best.
And yeah, how do we, and I think part is seeing like. It's the work of the church to form the individual. Mm-hmm. So Father Dan was talking about it's a school of love. But I always ask the question of like looking at seminary formation or looking at just religious formation as a ministry of the church and a gift that the church desires to give this individual. And so the question I have to ask myself is, are they free to receive the gift that the church desires to give to them? Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. going through the process of coming to know who they are, and it's like, well, it's not that you're not free, but it's that maybe the formation that you're called to receive is mm-hmm. is elsewhere.
Once we do the novitiate, though, the sister becomes, we call a junior, and makes promises, you know, takes vows temporary vows, and that becomes the engagement. I mean, we put it in a bridal and a marriage situation. And then finally, when 9 years down the line, the whole thing is 9 years, then it's the wedding, you know, mm-hmm. then it's final profession. And that goes back to our foundress, because our foundress, when she founded the community, was not permitted to take vows until 9 years, okay. you know, final vows until 9 years, because the priest didn't know if she'd stick it out. That's exactly, I mean, yeah. what, you know, if you translate the Italian, you know, it's like, well, we don't know if she's going to, you know, whatever. But and so we still follow that.
Let's go around the horn. Father, advice to somebody considering?
Well, yeah, that's the thing I did want to say. You know, don't be afraid to take this step. There's a formation plan and process if it's a diocesan priesthood or if you're called to be a religious sister, a religious brother, or a religious priest. You know, if you're called to do it, God will see you through it. If you're not, even if you're just coming for a year, two, three, four, five, you're going to learn something out of this. Mm-hmm. You're going to be a better man or woman for this. And if you're called then, maybe you are called to marriage. You're going to bring that and be probably one of the better husbands or wives mm-hmm. out there, because you've really taken the time to get to know yourself, to know the church, to know God, and to want to serve Him wholeheartedly. And the church has got it set up to allow for that. You're not a failure, right, if you go to seminary for a year or two yeah. and right. it's not for you. I think we think that, well, if I can't do that, then I'm worthless. Mm-hmm. We can get these mindsets, like, if I don't graduate college, which is in 4 years, I'm a failure. Well, I think that's kind of eased now. We recognize different career paths require different things. But this lifestyle, they've got these outs, right, where you can, you know, it's for like religious sister, you know, where you're a postulate, you're this beginner, you're an aspirant, then the novitiate. Now you maybe wear distinctive garb that, you know, is different.
Sure.
How does that suit you? Everybody's staring at you now. Can mm-hmm. you deal with that? You know, you'll learn that. If it's not for you, okay. If it is, keep going. Then the vows, you do them for a time period. Sure. You know, it's, yeah.
But it's you're not locking the door behind them.
No, and that's the big, I mean, we focus on discernment, right? So one of the good things is we invite a man into formation is to say, when you're entering, you're not entering into the entirety of your life. You're entering into a year. So we ask them to give it mm-hmm. a year.
Right.
And one of the big differences is that within diocesan formation or seminary formation, the first vows you take are on the day of your diaconate ordination. You know, it's a little bit different, but part is the continual participation in the program. I think for me, when I went, it was like, I'll give it a year. I'll give it another year. I'll give it another year. And it brings you to a point where it's like, I think this is where I'm called to be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So don't, like, if you, to back to what Sister said in the first segment, like, if you give God a little, God's going to give you a lot in return.
Yeah.
And it's not like I give to get, but like I give a year, and the Lord will bless that abundantly no matter what.
Sister? Advice, and also how can people contact you?
Advice, just please be open. Just be open to what God is telling you to be and come to Sisters of the Most Holy Trinity.
Father Garris?
Feel free to reach out to me. I know that this is broadcast throughout the entirety of the diocese, clepriesthood.com. All of that is there. I'd be more than happy to have a conversation with whomever, whenever, wherever about discernment.
Okay. Father Bowen, you've got the easiest one going.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, you know, where does God want you? That's what I want. If God wants you to be a diocesan priest, if I can help you to get there, amen. If it's to be a religious sister, consecrated virgin, whatever, I would say that's for all of us here. Where does God want you to be? Where you're going to be happy and making the best gift to yourself.
People want more information?
And for the Order of Mercy, Mercedarian Friars, orderofmercy.org. Yeah.
Very good.
Stop in and give me a call.
Today is the day, a special God Calling 1 hour edition. Today is World Day for Prayer for Vocations. So I would encourage anybody listening, say a prayer. Great way to close your day. Thank you so much. What a wonderful show. It's three great, easy to talk to folks, and it's been a blast. Thank you for joining us, and we hope those listening will join us each and every week at the same time, right here on God Calling.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God Calling.
Thank you for listening to God Calling here on AM 1260 The Rock. This locally produced program is dedicated to looking closer at religious vocations, from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. If you miss any part of today's program or you just want to listen again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.